is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Opinion columnist is fired over comments made about Charlie Kirk. Columbia University cancels a class on race and media, so a rogue radical professor launches a resistance study series. Free DC prepares to host the No Kings rally on October 18th in front of the Capitol. While Trump continues to weaponize federal budgets to force compliance, a local nonprofit continues to fund innovation, disruption, and system change to address racial justice. All that and more here on What's at Stake. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for this next edition of DC Takeover on What's at Stake. I'm your host, Kimon Freeman. This show is dedicated to the memory and legacy of Ashada Shakur, who is famous for saying that in a world of insanity, it's the strong that goes crazy. It's the weak that pretends there's nothing wrong. And so joining me this morning, I have a whole crew of strong and crazy guests here. Doing their best to fight authoritarianism in real time. Today, my guests are Karen Atiyya, liberated former Washington Post opinion columnist, and Frankie Sobran, Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Free DC, and Timmy Bennett, If a Foundation for Radical Possibility. Welcome, ladies, and good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right. Now, we want to start with you, Karen. How is it that Colbert loses his show, he gets an Emmy Award. Jimmy Kimmel loses his show and 1.7 million people divest from Disney, and of course he's brought back. What has been the pushback from your unceremoniously dismissal at the Washington Post over simply reporting the truth, as you saw it and as we saw it, in Charlotte Kirk's legacy that has been honored by so many of our elected officials?
First of all, thank you so much for having me. Goodness, I can't believe it's been almost a month since that happened. And as of now, as we're speaking, the Washington Post opinion section now has zero Black full-time writers, and I believe zero full-time Black editors in the opinion section as all of this is going on. I am a proud, longtime WAPO Union Labor Guild member, and so my guild comrades, brothers and sisters, have been protesting on my behalf, as far as I understand, and I'm filing, of course, a grievance with the Washington Post over this firing. And just for context, in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's murder, you know, I was an opinion columnist, so literally my job was to give opinions and facts. My alleged crime was speaking about the documented facts that white men are overly responsible for the vast majority of mass shootings and for right-wing political extremism, and coddling said white men is how America remains in this violent loop. And for that, I was accused of making disparaging comments about white men, even though I said violent white men, not all white men, not some white men, but violent ones. And it sets a very chilling precedent, obviously, for journalists to be able to speak the truth. Again, what I said was documented by facts. Sets a very chilling precedent for opinion journalists as to whose opinions are allowed in this new climate, whose opinions are allowed at the Washington Post, and then broadly for journalism, right? For those of people who want to talk about America, you cannot talk about America without talking about race. Yeah. So, you know, I've gotten a lot of support, a lot of folks, even former President Barack Obama weighed in on my behalf on Twitter. But honestly, I'm still processing this quick about face.
You said Barack Obama weighed in on your dismissal, but your last piece was critical of Barack Obama's legacy. So you got to speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's so much that's been wild about this. The last political piece I was allowed to write for the Washington Post was a piece criticizing, specifically criticizing everyone wanting Obama to come out and save us from what was happening, particularly white folks asking for this. My piece was called "Obama's Not Your Emotional Support President." And I was like, look, people are seeing these images of ICE kidnapping people off the streets, understandably distressed, but like calling on Barack Obama to come save y'all. Hey, y'all, let's look at his record. He was called deporter in chief for some reasons, right? So I was taking an overview of why he was criticized, particularly on immigration. And his people, after that was published, the Obama folks reached out and they were like, cute headline, but we don't like this part, this part, this part, this part. I was like, okay, I disagree, but okay. And we parted ways electronically and it was fine. We were chill. We were cool. It wasn't going after, the response wasn't, we're going to come after you. The response wasn't, we're going to sue your paper. Right. And it was just for him to come to my defense on Twitter, and to basically, you know, post the story of my firing and saying that we need to stand for the First Amendment and media companies need to not capitulate was wild, to say the least. Very wild, but cool. He was my emotional support president at that time.
Emotional support president. All right, well, at least he was some use. Frankie, clearly no one's coming to save us. Can you talk about the work of Harris Wildest Dreams and Free DC, especially in the climate where the show is dedicated to the radical legacy of Rashad Shakur, when we saw the mayor of Chicago speak out in defense of attacks on Rashad Shakur. But our own mayor, Lori Ingrams from Fox News, says that Muriel Bowser is the best mayor Washington, D.C. has ever had. So Fox News endorses our own mayor. Now, in that climate, how are we resisting in the streets with no one coming to save us? And clearly we're not even getting the type of resistance from our elected officials here.
Yeah, it's been quite a time, Kamal, honestly. When you look around the country and you see particularly how other Black mayors have positioned themselves and have really said, I'm going to be here to stand in the gap for my people. I'm going to be here to stand in the gap for the people of the city. And you look at our elected officials locally, there leaves so much to be desired. And let me speak in my personal hat first, and then I'll move on to what organizationally the things that we're doing. The mayor has abandoned us, essentially. The mayor has, in every sense of the way, has not put up any sort of fight against this authoritarian regime. She has in no way, in fact, she's done quite the opposite. Meetings with Stephen Miller every week. She has made it so it's easier for what they're doing federally to happen. She's laid the groundwork between her and Brooke Pinto since 2023 to make it easier to incarcerate our people and put us through this loop of harm. And if we were going to leave it up to elected officials to save us, we would essentially already be overtaken. And the beautiful thing about revolution, about the people, is that the power does lie with us, right? The beautiful thing about that is that it's going to take all of us to save us. Electoral politics is one tool, but really when we look at the histories of people fighting against authoritarianism, against dictators, against genocides, it's the people uprising that really is going to change the trajectory of what's happening. And at Harriet's Wildest Dreams, I'll put my organizational hats back on now, at Harriet's Wildest Dreams and at Free DC, We are gaining that people power. For those of you who don't know about Harriet's Wildest Dreams, we are a Black abolitionist community defense hub. That looks like mass mobilization. It looks like legal support. It looks like regular court watching. We need our people to be trained up. If you see police, if you encounter police, if someone in your neighborhood is being harassed by police, it is our duty as good upstanders to make sure that we are recording that interaction, to make sure that we are aware of what's happening and they are aware of us. They're allowed to get away with things. They are allowed to brutalize our people when we don't pay attention to what's happening. And when we tuck our heads and people say, that's not my business. It is all of our business. It's our duty. If we're speaking about Asada, it's our duty to fight for our freedom and it's our duty to win. And the way that we do that is by organizing. Relational organizing. Can you leave your house and do you know your neighbor? Have you talked to your neighbors? Do you know what happens in your neighborhood? Have you been to an ANC meeting? These are the types of things. So like the basic, like I'm not even saying today, tomorrow, you have to join my organization. What I'm saying is you have to get civically involved in some way. It can't just be, oh, I'm about to get my bag. I'm just trying to figure out what's for me and mine. That's not going to work because eventually they're going to come for you and yours. All we have to do is look at Chicago. How long did people say, oh, this is not Black people business. Black people don't got nothing to do with this. Da, 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 da. And they raided an apartment building in Chicago and zip tied children. It is all of our business and it has to be all of our fight. So for Harriet's Wildest Dreams particularly, we are doing regular wraparound legal support that includes jail support and court support. We've seen the numbers for people being arrested. I was talking to some of my data folks yesterday. Some of these numbers, the numbers of physical people who are being held in CCB have doubled since the occupation. We're coming out with a report soon. So for those listening, if you're like, well, how do I get involved? What do I do? The first thing I would say is get court watch trained, get trained in knowing your rights and also trained on how to film the police. If you're interested in fighting and helping us on the Hill as we're doing these different congressional visits, as we're building people power to build towards that 3.5% for FreeDC, come to a FreeDC orientation. You can go to freedcproject.org to get involved. And for Harriet's Wildest Dreams, you can find us on Instagram and get connected. I'll pause there.
All right. We have an independent artist here locally by the name of Head Rock, who is famous for saying that if you want to change your situation, join an organization. And I think a great place to start is Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Free DC. Now, Timmy, we've seen the weaponization of Trump's weaponizing federal budgets to force compliance and acquiescence. How are you able to thrive in this environment and creating resources for the resistance and the people that you represent with if a foundation for radical possibility?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. And thank you, Kimon, for having me. First, let me talk about myself, because I agree with Frankie. We need to know like what we're talking about and who we're talking to. My name is Timmy Bennett. I'm an attorney by trade, living in Ward 5 neighborhood of Bloomingdale in Northwest DC. I was raised in a Black nationalist Pan-African community on the south side of Chicago. I identify as a cisgender woman using she, her pronouns and a Black feminist. I'm also a descendant of American enslavement. My folks were enslaved in North Carolina, Arkansas, and Virginia. My people are Black people in America, Black people in the diaspora, and radical anti-racist. And I do this work for my ancestors. I do it for in the interest of my current family and friends and my future descendants. And so I moved to DC for law school. I've been here for the past 20 years, but I absolutely can't claim both DC and Chicago as home. I go back to Chicago all the time. So this feels doubly personal what's happening in Chicago and what's happening in DC. And of course, it is because of the Black people, right, that are both in both of these cities and the Black leadership of these cities. And to Frankie's point, the responses have been vastly different when you look at one, their statehood, right? So I'm gonna acknowledge that we are disenfranchised here. It's very hard for me to give up that Illinois driver's license to get this DC driver's license, y'all. But there is still a way that you can still, like, the anticipatory obedience, that is not a real strategy, and they will never leave us alone. So I just have to acknowledge that. And what we're seeing with other mayors and other governors, yes, we are more vulnerable as the district without statehood, but there's still ways to push back, and there's still ways to protect the interests of your residents, even if you have to go down fighting, right? Because you're here at the service and for the service of the people. So I'll hold that. So as my professional role, I'm co-CEO of IF, a Foundation for Radical Possibility. We are a private racial justice foundation here in DC, but funding in the region. We fund in suburban Maryland, DC, and Northern Virginia. Our vision at IF is that Black people and people of the global majority live powerfully, abundantly, and beautifully in healthy, self-determined communities free of physical, social, economic, and ideological violence. And so happy to be here with you, Karen and Frankie and Kimon. Harriet's Wildest Dream is one of our grantees. We also done a lot of rapid response funding to Free DC. Back to your question, Kimon. What was your question? Was it around philanthropy and how are philanthropies able to sustain themselves in this moment?
Exactly.
So it depends on people's funding resources, right? We are a private racial justice foundation. We are institutional philanthropy. So we have an endowment. So endowed foundations can do whatever the hell they want. However, those foundations are being under attack right now, right? So they started being under attack over a year ago when the right were trying to label foundations and donors who were supporting pro-Palestinian movements and pro-Palestinian nonprofits as terrorists. So that's when the attack on philanthropy originally started in this sense. And then now, in the past few weeks, particularly in the George Soros investigation, this thing, this report done by Capital Research Center, et cetera, now they are trying to attack philanthropy and go after our endowments and freeze our assets and take our resources so we are no longer able to support racial justice, racial equity, anything, democracy, right? And I think it's a slippery slope. This is actually not the first time, but this is a time where I'm seeing more conservative, right? And even philanthropy on the left saying that, like, you shouldn't do this, because of course, if they do it to us, why wouldn't they be freezing all of their assets too? They are supporting far right hate groups, right? And to Karen's point, we're in a moment of very intentional and pervasive white male fragility. And so, like, this idea that we can't quote people in their own words, right? Like, we can't name the thing, like the DOJ is deleting reports that show that the biggest threat, the domestic threat in America, is the far right and white male violence, right? And now we're deleting the research, right? We're deleting reports, and the narrative is that it is leftists, it is liberals, it is the Democrats who are out here doing political violence and actual violence. And we know that that's actually not true. However, we also know that, like, they are winning on the narrative front. When you look at the polling data, people are believing these lies and nobody's calling them out. And even though we're putting alternative narratives out there, they're not being picked up. Even our liberal progressive media are center right now. There was a murder, a white guy, MAGA guy, murdered two women over the weekend in New Jersey, and all the headlines say teen kills two teens. There were, you know, nobody's labeling him as far right or MAGA, but the reason why he went after these women is because of their remarks on Kirk. And so, like, even the narrative, if he had been liberal, a leftist, there's not equal treatment in the media in this moment. And I mean, I'm not surprised, but I think we need to call that out. We need to name it and we need to push back. I feel like that was a lot, and I can pause here and, you know, answer any clarifying questions unless you want to move on.
We are in a period where we are all asked to do too much. So keep doing as much as you can. Ms. Karen, I don't know if you recall this in the previous conversation. I told you that when I was fired from the post office for making anti-war statements to a congressman's wife, my roommate threw me a party. So we wanted to take a moment to acknowledge you and congratulate you on your transition. I hope you heard me in my introduction. I refer to you as the liberated former Washington Opinion columnist. But I heard you mention that you have seen how you was treated in corporate media when you had the platform in the Washington Post versus when you don't have the platform in Washington Post, and that only independent media will embrace you and bring you on to amplify your story and address these issues. Can you speak to that? And before you do, let me quickly remind our listeners that this independent media outlet here, WPW, our Pacific affiliate, only 8% of this listener-supported station is actually supported by the listeners. Only 8%. So we need to address that because we do not have the luxury of assuming that the six corporations that control most of what we see here and read is going to report anything that's of relevance to us and our liberation. Ms. Karen, you have the floor in the responding because you have now put on the hat as a rogue radical professor. So I want you to speak to that as well.
Yeah. And Tammy and Frankie, you know, I'm listening to y'all talk about, you know, the importance of being in community and the importance of knowing the resources that are already out there, and also just my time in mainstream media, there's this constant almost assumption that readers were dumb, that they weren't seeing what was going on. And Tammy, you named the double standard so well, right? About we just had a horrific killing of women, you know, a gender-based violence in New Jersey, directly tied to Charlie Kirk. And I've barely seen blips about it, you know, on the media. Just a month ago, the right was literally crying for leftist blood over their, you know, their knight, their Christian knight who had been martyred, right? And these are the sort of, these are the erasures that at least when I was, you know, team of one trying, I would point out, you know, so much of my job, I think, as an editor and a columnist was also putting on the hat of media critic, particularly for these double standards. And now that is gone, cut. Also, I think the part of the media, again, to uplift what organizations, you know, like y'all's are doing, because I also think there's been a bit of, not a bit, there's definitely a bias against equipping people with the knowledge and resources of who's in their backyard offering the court watching trainings, who's in their backyard offering ways to film the police. Are we, as journalists, being of service to the people and defending the people, particularly in a city like DC? Yeah, liberated. I suppose now I have the opportunity to do that. And not just that, but I found in the independent media, I mean, even Kimon, you know, like you, it's been much more collaborative. And I think much more almost like, okay, we need to band together, particularly, you know, as Black journalists in this occupied city. We're all we've got right now. So it's been, I love that you said transition. You know, it feels very, well, hey, this was the path. This was the destiny. You know, this is what was meant, I suppose. Seeing how even independent media folks have been like, yo, we got to stick together because we're up against, I mean, again, even take Charlie Kirk and the Turning Point USA. That's an organization that is, what, $80 million in funding? Whereas, you know, we are.
Wait. Let me just pause you there. It's not like before he died, Turning Point was $92 million annual budget. And that was funded by Koch brothers and three couples. That's four entities, $92 million annually. And in this moment, community foundations are being challenged to fund TP. I know two leaders of community foundations right now who they're being tested, right? Because they're also testing institutions, like people, Black leaders and folks that are perceived to be leftist or liberal or progressive. Far right people, our donors are coming to them wanting to fund TPUSA. And I know two leaders who over the past 2 weeks, like combined, folks were giving them $6.5 million, right? So like, that's $92 million by four entities, three couples and Koch brothers before his death. And in this moment, like, not only are they getting, they're getting resource at a huge, like, by you know, America, they're also doing it through organizations that have like hate filters. And so technically, Charlie Kirk's speech rises to the level of hate speech. And so these organizations are like also like impacting or going against their values to fund this entity because they know if they don't, then they will be targeted, doxxed, all the things. I'm not saying that's right. I feel like individual organizations are doing whatever they need to do, but they are being tested and they are being resourced in a way that is not comparable to the left. Or to, you know, liberals.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like, the rules are crazy. And it's at a billionaire individual level, and nobody's doing that on the opposite side.
Right. And to put those figures in contrast, I mean, the Washington Post just last year reported a loss of $100 million. Right. So, the point is sure, there's liberation, I guess. But liberation without resources, what do we call that? It's a very asymmetric war right now. For me at least, I'm in the very beginning stages, I suppose, of this new transition. I mean, for myself, as you mentioned in your intro, I was also teaching on race and media at Columbia University during the height of the encampments and saw the funding for that class get canceled. And so, yeah, I decided to, all right, well, I'll just take this to the people anyway. So I had a summer pilot. I decided to throw it up on Zoom and see if people would be interested. And something like 2,000 people said that they'd be interested. So I ended up teaching 500 students, you know, myself. And actually, as I was teaching this summer, I was in the rooms next door was the Free DC folks giving these organizational trainings. And for me, that was just really a signal. I'm like, all right, like, we really do need to be doing this resistance work, like, side by side. And I'd love to connect more with the Free DC folks, especially, I think, to give journalists training. I think it's super important as particularly Black journalists are being pushed out of legacy media right now, being pushed out of the Washington Post right now. We need to do what we can, I think, to fill the gaps that are being left and to keep the Black journalists, all journalists, of course, but to keep the Black journalists, especially independent and still in the mainstream media, safe while they're covering what's happening to this city. This is a historic revolutionary time and a historically oppressive time. And so in my sort of, you know, as I'm teaching race and media, yes, and it's a lot of it is a history course on the development of mass media and how it's been intertwined with race relations and international relations. But I'm also like, this is the history that is actively also being pushed out of the schools, obviously, right? We're seeing the right wing wanting to use Prager University, for instance, and these materials that want to completely rewrite, soften, erase white supremacy. And so this is a full frontal, I call it a multi-headed hydra assault on philanthropy, on education, on media. Actually, I don't call it an assault right now. I call it capture, right? So, I mean, some of us are doing what we can in our individual capacities. Come on, you said so many of us are doing too much right now. I think the time when we thought, oh, okay, black folks, just sit this out. Like, you know, let the, yeah, no, that time is done because our survival is very much at stake. So, I mean, yeah, as much as I sort of joke about being rogue, and I understand that being a lone wolf in this time is also not the way to make it through, right? And you know, I'm really happy to be introduced to all of y'all, because yeah, I mean, now without these institutions, a lot of us are going to have to really learn how to be in community, learn how to do the mutual aid. I think my former sort of colleagues in the mainstream media, like, I think like media criticism right now is so important. And I actually think this is a golden era for the independent media, but we're also not talking about the fact that these folks own the platforms that we're having these discussions on. Instagram.
We're going to pause right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. We are indeed should be indeed in the golden era of independent media, and we need to continue to honor that. And at the, as a result, at the bottom of the hour, we got to take a break, and we have to come back to hear more from all of this illustrious, rebelliously beautiful panel we have here. You are listening to the DC Takeover on West at Stake here on WPFW. We'll be right back with more.
Peace! This is your social justice calendar for the week of October 6th, 2025. Wednesday, October 8th, Pan-African Community Action and Black Alliance for Peace Citywide Alliance will collaborate on the next Asada Shakur Study Group sessions, U.S. Military Aggression from National Guard in D.C. to AFRICOM in Africa, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Workers and Wellness Center on 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More info and registration is on the D.C. Teach-Ins on AFRICOM2025.eventbrite.com. Thursday, October 9th at 10 a.m., there will be a luncheon for blind and low vision people hosted by the National Federation of the Blind of the D.C. Seniors Division at the Busboys and Poets Brookland location on 625 Monroe Street, Northeast Washington, D.C. For more info, visit busboysandpoets.com. On Friday, October 10th, from 6 to 8 p.m., Off the Mall Tours and Rainbow History Project are offering an intersectional look at LGBTQ History Month to highlight the lives of Black Broadway legends throughout history with the Queer Black Broadway Walking Tour at the Howard Theater, 620 T Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. For more info, visit eventbrite.com. On Saturday and Sunday, October 11th and 12th at 9 a.m., there will be a Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass tour hosted by Wisdom Walkers, Inc., located at the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Museum on 4068 Golden Hill Road, Church Creek, Maryland. For more info and to register, visit wisdomwalkers.org. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back. This is this installment of DC Takeover Town Hall. What's at Stake? I'm your host, Kimon Freeman. Again, we are joined by Karen Atiyah, liberated former Washington Post opinion columnist, longtime Washington Post opinion columnist, and Frankie Sebron, Harry's Wildest Dreams of Free DC, and Timmy Bennett, If a Foundation for Radical Possibility. Now, ladies, with the government shutdown and Trump's unprecedented Quantico military meeting last week, we're embarking upon the final steps of the 10 steps to total authoritarianism. And for those who are not aware, that Stacey Abrams did a very, very deep dive on the 10 steps to authoritarianism that I think everyone should take a moment to check out and study. But here we are. The Trump regime has made it clear that their militarization is not about crime or even immigration. It's about the maintenance of a white nationalist dominated society and the destruction of a multicultural democratic society with the full cooperation of some of our own elected officials here in Washington, D.C. So having said that, ladies, the floor is open. Frankie, we left without hearing a response from you.
Yeah, just for a second, I wanted to ask Karen, in a time where all of the social media platforms are owned by the oligarchs and most of the media that the country consumes is filtered, what do you think is the role of the left for on social media? Like, how are we leveraging content creators and small independent organizations, and how are we working together across to push the narratives but get it mainstream? Like, do you think leveraging socials is a way when they own the media itself?
Yeah, that's a super good question. I mean, right now, these are the tools that we have. There are, like, you know, for instance, alternative newsletter hosting platforms like Ghost, Beehive. I personally am on Substack, which has been a space for a lot of writers and creators who are moving there. Obviously, there's a lot of there has been pushback on Substack as a platform because this is a place that hosts Mehdi Hasan Zateo. You know, after he left MSNBC, he founded a media company, Zateo. My former colleagues at the Washington Post, Jennifer Rubin, hosts The Contrarian, The Bulwark Online. But that was also the home of Barry Weiss's Free Press. And Substack also made a huge deal about hosting far-right, in my opinion, you know, content. And Free Press now has been acquired by CBS News, right? My personal attitude is to keep one's head on a swivel. Don't put all of your eggs in any one social media basket. We saw what happened with folks who were protesting Israel's genocide in Gaza being shadow banned. I'm basically completely suppressed on X, on Twitter. That used to be where I have like 200,000 followers there. My engagement is damn near zero. And it's not because I've changed. It's because the algorithm has. So I know that there have been creators, and I'm thinking of Levy Jones specifically, who for years, for a decade, has always told people, have your own website, have your own platforms, that audience that you create, have an email list that you can create, because you're at the mercy of these changing algorithms. And even the mainstream media, we were, you know, at the Post, we struggled with Google deciding to change its algorithms. Facebook used to be all pro-democracy and open discussion, and then it said, news is hard. We're going to pivot away from that. That cost, you know, mainstream media millions of dollars. And, you know, when anytime that these platforms are like, okay, we're going to go back to video, like, it's this scrambling. So I think part of the resistance will be building our own platform. Yeah. Building our own. What people can do in the meantime is, again, like, protect that audience, that community as much as you can, have backup plans. But for the moment, this is what we've got. And back to our, you know, discussions about TPUSA and everything, and the multi-billionaires that are pouring money into buying X and buying these platforms. I don't know if we have that on our, not even that we have that, but even if we tried right now, they're coming after us. I'm on Blue Sky a lot. I find it to be personally a source of a lot of, you know, I'm able to post there freely, but I think about that all the time. The second that this administration decides that Blue Sky is a liberal hotbed, that could be it, right? So I think right now we have to think really, really differently. And I'm very, very much, and the part of the reason why I like to teach in person, I think a lot of us have to kind of get offline, to be honest, because online also is a means for surveillance, is a means for data collection, is a means for hacking. And so I've been thinking, part of the reason why, like, I have my school sort of in person and off those platforms in a way, is precisely because I think the human to human connection is so, so important. And again, like, I just think we're going to have a mix, a hybrid of connecting with people underground in many ways. While still, yes, of course, leveraging for visibility. I don't believe in seeding ground while we can.
Thank you for that.
Can I just want to add that, like, so I think every plus one, everything that Karen said, but there are other, like, I think we do need our own, right? There's another Black woman-owned social media platform that's launched last week. It's called BYO, which is it stands for By Invitation Only. And so I do think we need our own. I do think we'll have to remove ourselves. We have to go back to resourcing and looking, getting news from our Black-owned newspapers. I think Ground News is one that I've been going to. It's not Black-owned, but they check their sources. There is unbiased and it's actually factual news. And so I think, and there's a shift, right? I think we also have to do text messaging. I think it's something like 80 something percent of people open their text messages, right? So we have to go non-traditional because they are not only are they, the algorithm's not working, they're using it for mass surveillance, right? So whatever you're saying, you're being put up on like a dossier that ICE is like, has some new department where they are combing through social media to start dossiers on you and potentially for, you know, future raids. And so it's not only are we not getting the amplification and the following that people, like that people who are interested are not finding your post, but they're also going to use it for you're also being vulnerable in regards to your safety, right? And so eventually we will have to move from there. And if we don't have our own, then we'll have to have alternatives. The other thing is like this, us also generational. So the youth are not like getting our news the way that millennials are getting their news, right? They follow, like I've been talking to professors at Howard and Morgan, like who do journalism, like, what are the, like, how are we getting the youth? Because the way that Charlie Kirk had that following, and a lot that is in direct response to white youth supporting Obama, right? Like they felt like, oh my God, like this is our future. And they essentially started seeding and supporting these far right young individuals who, you know, frankly, couldn't make it into the schools they wanted to make it in. And then they started blaming, the reason why they didn't make it into those schools is because some Black person took their spot, right? All that to say, like youth are following four people and then the algorithm, that's how they get their news. They're only getting their news from TikTok. And we know that that's not a safe space either. So how are we tapping into that youth and that generation? And how are we plugging them into the news? Like, I think last year, one of the professors said that like 58% of his freshman students knew what January 6th was. This year, 38% knew what January 6th was. So, right, like that is a huge gap.
Yeah. And I think to even add on to that, not just like how they're getting their information, but what outlets are they following? I'm thinking about the Kilmo Newses, the DMV Hoods and News. Those are the ones that our DC youth are tapping into. And how are we pulling those news outlets who the youth are already tapped into? How are we pulling them left? How are we getting them the political education that they need so they're not on the, you know, the Black capitalist agenda? So it's not the Zeus networks of the world that are essentially brainwashing our children, brainwashing our people to make it so that, okay, I'm not going to look at the real issues. I'm just going to be tapped into the bread and the bread and the circus. And so the attention economy for not only our youth, but for our Black people as a whole. That brings it back to, you know, if everybody's more concerned about how they're going to get their bag, that means we have to do our work of meeting the material needs of the people. How are we making revolution irresistible? If I'm over here like, oh, I'm talking about the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, they don't know what the I don't know if I can cuss. They don't know what that is. And so how are we making it like, oh, no, I actually want to be over there. There can be no revolution without the hood. And are we being intentional about our people, our neighborhoods, our people who are disenfranchised, and about getting them on this freedom train?
Mm-hmm. But, I agree. Yeah. We don't have the shared analysis, Frankie. We need the freedom schools, right, of the civil rights movement, because we are in the civil rights fight of our lifetimes, right? Also, like, there are even mainstream, like when I think of like the Breakfast Club and stuff, like when they're just there for clicks, when you're bringing on like huge anti-Black racists and you're not going at them, right? When they're okay, when they feel safe to come on your show and you're not really like making this man leave crying, like that's crazy.
Yeah, I will say, you know, one development that happened last week is at least the Griot, is now back under Black ownership under Ashley Allison, which is great. Shout out to her. But that's, you know, one drop in a massive media bucket. So I agree. We're living in an information environment that is so heavily siloed, where people are being served regardless of race, and they're targeting the algorithms with what they think you want to see. Right. And so it's going to take a lot of work to overcome that. And I think this is a time for people to watch very closely media policy, media development news for as to how to strategize, right? Around these things. So watching what's happening with TikTok, watching the ownership that's being changed, watching, like, even with AI, we haven't even talked about AI, watching what's happening in those spaces so that we can warn our people to be prepared and have alternatives if necessary.
Absolutely. And, you know, issues like the changing algorithms, the fact of shadow banning, these are real things that have been used to push back. I myself, on our platform, We Act Radio, we, during the Congressional Black Caucus, we had a video that went viral because we was holding our Congressional Black Caucus members who allowed the Charlie Kirk resolution to pass unanimously in the Senate. Okay, so that means that not only our fearless leader Bernie Sanders didn't vote no, but also Senator Cory Booker didn't vote no. Senator Reverend in Georgia, can't think of the brother's name, and Warnock in Georgia, and our own sisters, Senator Alsobrooks in Maryland. So I asked Senator Alsobrook, you know, why did the Charlie Kirk resolution passed unanimously in the Senate? She refused to answer that question. That video went viral. 500,000 people watched it because it's what? It's being critical of Black people. When I promote this interview and tell them that Karen's coming on, crickets, nothing. Like, the only person that responded was Karen. You're like, and so how do you go from, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers engaged with you, and a mere mentioning of your name, silence? So can you speak to that as you're moving forward? Because I have to also big up the fact that I myself signed up for your media training course, and you are indeed a radical role professor. Speak to that.
Yeah. You know, and this is just personal life wisdom and experience, right? I for those who don't know, I was the editor who hired Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who was killed by the Saudi regime in 2018. And at that time, you know, I was pushed out, you know, mainstream media. I was on all the networks. I was Jamal and me, the Washington Post, were held up as global icons of press freedom. So I got all that attention. I also know, you know, and I was writing a book about that, and that book got mysteriously dropped by my publisher. I know what it's like to be at the heights of everything. I was sitting next to Jeff Bezos at dinners. Yeah. I know what it's like to have the world champion you and having the world abandon you the next moment. I still stay true to my principles and work hard no matter what. You know, if the lights are on, great. If the lights are off, keep grinding anyway. And now, yes, it's true that, you know, I know that the people are behind me because I know I'm focused on doing the work and focused on being strategic. And I believe history is going to prove us right. That's no consolation to the people who are being kidnapped off the streets right now. I understand that, and people who are being victimized right now. But I think I just have a higher ancestral calling that I do the work no matter if there's applause or fancy invites or not. And because this is, we're in the fight of our lives right now. So, and sometimes if the mainstream media is scared of you, you might be doing something right. If the politicians who are supposed to be tasked with representing the people, when the people are actually doing the work and they're running scared, you might be actually doing something right. So these things, I'm quite zen about it. The world will go up and down, but like being rooted and grounded in purpose and in the mission and the work, jobs come and go, but your mission still remains. And I'm just the type, I'll figure it out. We will figure it out, you know? So for me, yeah, it's an indication of the world. But I guess I tell people, I'm like, this is the time where you have to really maybe sit and take some time off of social media, take some time and really ground yourself and like,
okay, I don't know if she froze right there. Ladies,
I can sleep at night.
We're gonna get contact.
You know, knowing that I did my best.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah. So folks, thank you.
Yes, your contact information.
Oh, yes. People can find me. I'm writing on Substack. My Substack is called The Golden Hour. And folks, actually, there's still time to sign up for my Race, Media, and International Affairs course. They're recorded lectures. It's all online. We have over 600 students who've signed up for this fall cohort. So it's an incredible community. So you can find that at resistancestudyseries.com. And the course is called Race, Media, and International Affairs. And I'm your lead instructor and rogue radical professor. And we have our second session tonight, actually, at 6 p.m. So we meet Mondays and Wednesdays, 6 p.m. to 7:45 p.m. And we've got a great lineup of guest speakers. And I would love to have y'all on to have, discussions about this in D.C. and how we resist and how we think about media and how we think about moving differently. So for me, it's a community space for us to have these discussions. So, yes, people can find me there.
I'm a proud participant myself. So thank you, Professor. Frankie.
Yeah, ways that you can get connected. You can go to freedcproject.org. We do orientations, at least two different ones, one in person and one virtual every month. Get connected to Harriet's Wildest Dreams. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Blue Sky. We're on Twitter. We're on all the places. Also, harrietsdreams.org. If you want to attend any of our trainings, we do. We have an info session tomorrow. So if you want to learn about abolition, if you want to learn about the different work that we do in DC, you can go to mobilize.us/HWD. I'll say that one more time. mobilize.us/HWD. Learn about all the good work we're doing. And get connected to Free DC, y'all. Like everybody. It's going to take all of us to get to liberation. If you don't hear me, hear nothing else I say today. If you think that there's nothing you can do, that is absolutely false. There is space and place for everybody in this movement.
Thank you, Frankie. Timmy.
Yeah, I feel like you can engage with us on our website, iffdn.org, and then on Instagram, if_fdn, and then, of course, you can find us on LinkedIn. And I just want to acknowledge Karen, but then also, like, Black women, and people keep saying, like, Black people not fighting this moment. We are fighting. We literally on this page right now, fighting in this moment. And so we might not be in the streets where we like George Floyd protest, but even if we were, they want that to happen so they can shoot us and you know, really do martial law. But Black folks are fighting, and I think we know that we'll continue to fight because we know in order for anybody to be free, Black folks gotta be free. But I want to also shout out Black women, the 300,000 plus Black women that
have well, for your work. And things are changing. There's a venue formerly known as Hill Prince at 1337 8th Street Northeast. It's now known as Hush Harbor, where they take your phones. So you have a whole different conversation with them. They have an offline community that meets there. And for those who are not familiar with Martin Luther King's next to his last speech that was delivered here in Washington, D.C., March 31st, 1968, it was entitled Remaining Awake During a Great Revolution. He says in that speech that far too often people find themselves living in periods of great social change, yet they fail to develop the new ideas, the new mental responses that the new situation demands. They end up sleeping through a revolution. I submit to you that's the quintessential definition of stay woke. So stay safe, stay strong, stay woke. And stay tuned for Dr. Ife Williams for Get Woke and Stay Woke. And taking us home is Urban Ave 31 featuring Raheem Devon. Heaven help us all. Peace and blessings.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films scored live with hip-hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
The Birchmere presents The Whispers on October 10th and 11th, and Keiko Matsui, November 2nd. Details at birchmere.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW. And it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show. You and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
What's it do if you're approached by the police?
We deserve to be safe in our neighborhoods.
Follow these tips to assert your rights.
If you're being stopped, detained, or arrested, the best thing to say is nothing.
Stick to only these questions. Am I free to go? If stopped by law enforcement, try to leave the conversation as quickly and safely as possible.
Ask, am I free to go?
If yes, walk away calmly and quietly. Running away could give them pretext to detain you. Officers may try an incite a reaction. Ignore them. Knowing your rights is a great first step.
And asserting your rights is even better.
WPFW. WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The DC Palestinian Film and Arts Festival is back this October with powerful Palestinian storytelling through live performance, films, and discussions with artists and activists, a culinary workshop, and a special children's program. The festival kicks off on Thursday, October 9th, and runs through Sunday, October 12th at MLK Library and other venues. On Friday evening, the festival will present the DC premiere of A State of Passion, which